the Alloy Orchestra is presenting Phantom of the Opera, a film, in conjunction with the Cinema Arts Center at the Harry Chapin Theater. And at Maxwell's in New York City, you can see Holler and Wild Rose. Call before you haul. Sometimes we get this information weeks in advance, and sometimes there's last-minute changes. So thanks for listening to WUSB, Stony Brook, and our concert billboard.
And this is radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6:01, time for Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. It's August. It's the beginning of August, August the 5th. I can't believe it's gone so fast. Summer will be over before you know it. And this is the beginning of a month that's going to have all kinds of weird activities going on, starting with the Olympics, coming up in what? 3 days, 4 days? It's coming up in Beijing really, really soon. And you can expect the whole world to stop and wait for something to happen. It's going to be weird. It already is weird. It's strange having Olympics in a place like Beijing in the first place, and seeing how the rest of the world is going to react to all kinds of human rights accusations and things like that. President Bush is going over there. He's going to be at the opening ceremonies. And that's sort of seen as a free pass to the Chinese to not worry so much about human rights issues that they've been widely accused of abusing. It's a big deal in certain situations, but not in other situations. Remember the Russian boycott and the boycott in Los Angeles, all about human rights issues and tensions in the Cold War. But now, doesn't seem to matter as much. Be interesting to see how it plays out. And of course, we have the two conventions coming up. We have the Democratic Convention and the Republican Convention. One in St. Paul, Minnesota. One in Denver, Colorado. I'll be staying away from both of them. And that's going to be a bit of fun, too. I imagine, I would guess, this is my educated guess, however valuable that might be, that vice presidential candidates are going to be announced, or at least one will be announced, before the Olympics. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with the convention anymore. They used to announce the vice presidential candidate at the convention, but they don't do that anymore. They do it beforehand. And the reason I think they're going to do it before, or at least maybe Obama will do it before the Olympics, is because all the attention will be focused away from him if he does it during the Olympics. And I'm not really sure how much time there is between the end of the Olympics and the beginning of the Democratic Convention, or if there's any time at all. But I don't know if that's enough time to actually get the positive press spin he would want. Now, McCain has a bit more time, but not much. So they could both announce. And I'd like to hear from our listeners, maybe a little bit later on in the program, who you think might be chosen. From what I hear, it could be anyone. Yeah. Could be somebody you know. So who would be a good choice? Who would be a bad choice? And where could these campaigns possibly go? I heard on the news today that our own New York City Mayor Bloomberg is on the list for both candidates. Yes, can you imagine that? He could be a choice for McCain. He could be a choice for Obama. If anything tells you that the two parties are not that far apart, it should be that. But in reality, I think they're far enough apart where if this country actually votes Republicans back into office after the crap that's gone on in the last 8 years with all sorts of loss of life and things like that, there's very little hope. And I don't often say that. But if we turn a blind eye to this kind of thing, not just by... I think simply not electing them is not enough. I think there need to be trials and all kinds of punishments for the things that have happened. I mean, think about it. 4,000 people on our side, in our country, taken and basically murdered for no reason. No reason. It's absolutely insane. And that certainly doesn't count the number of people on the other side. We don't count them. You notice that? We just never count them. They don't count. And all these battles where there's good guys and bad guys, well, it must cross your mind that the other side doesn't see it quite the same way. It's not that simplistic. And it can't be like a Hollywood movie where there are just good guys and bad guys. There's got to be justification on either side. There have to be more complex issues. So the people over there in Iraq are seeing the Americans as the bad guys. The people in the Palestinian territories are seeing the Israelis as the bad guys. But you notice that the numbers just never seem to be anywhere close to even. There's a prisoner trade of some sort in the occupied West Bank. And they trade the remains of two soldiers for 1,000 Palestinian prisoners. You know, it's simply insane how it's never one for one. And you basically carry that on to the battles themselves, where one side takes heavy casualties, one side takes light casualties, yet they're both treated with the same equal attention, or maybe even more attention. I've been watching this program the last couple of days called Generation Kill. It's made by a couple of people who did The Wire. Now, The Wire is the best show ever to have been made on television. And I'm sorry, but there just is no room for debate on that issue. Best show ever made, American television, British television, Kuwaiti television, New Zealand television, it doesn't matter, it's the best show ever made, okay? I'm not going to discuss it. That's just final, all right? Now, so because of that, because of that proclamation of mine, I watched this program, also because a few people insisted that I watch it, and it's about the Iraq invasion. It's a, I believe it's a 7-part series on HBO about the invasion of Iraq by U.S. Marines. And I've seen 2 episodes so far. I think 4 have aired. And, you know, I'm struck. I'm struck by, I mean, maybe this is just how it's beginning, how the program is beginning to sort of set a tone. But I'm struck by how completely one-sided it is, showing the people on the American side as, well, it's kind of weird because the program shows them as humans, as people who actually care. You know, you hear someone say something humanitarian, like, well, we can't let these refugees simply wander off to be killed by death squads. That would be wrong. You know, you hear somebody say something like that, and you realize, gee, these people have a semblance of humanity. Of course, you don't hear the Iraqis say anything because they're just speaking gibberish, so you don't really know what they're talking about, but they all seem pretty disorganized and messy and things like that. Kind of the perception that you would get maybe if you were in the military, maybe if you were reporting on this for the mass media. And basically, if you watch the program and you hear some of the conversations going on inside the, I guess, the barracks of the Marines, or whatever you call those places, when they're moving from one place to another, you realize how broken some of these people are. I mean, just the murderous hatred. I mean, there are people there, and this is real. This is an accurate assessment from what I'm told, from what I hear. There are people who simply live to go to war. And they get very angry if they're sent over someplace and they don't see any action. They want to kill. They want to be involved in a battle. They want to see destruction and bomb things. One person commenting how cool it must have been to be that guy who dropped the bomb on Nagasaki and killed hundreds of thousands of people. Now, of course, that was presented as kind of a messed up person, but I think the majority of the characters in the program seem to really be savoring the specter of battle, of getting involved. In fact, the commander tells his troops that, yes, we're going to be in this thing. We're assured that we're going to be in the thick of it. And that's met with cheers, because battle is a good thing. Now, the issue of foreign troops invading a country, a sovereign nation, and basically shooting anyone that they deem needs to be shot, kicking in their doors, burning their buildings, destroying their land, really messing up the soccer season, whatever else happens when foreign troops come into a country, that just isn't focused upon. That's just, it's kind of a given. Yeah, the Americans are in a foreign nation. In fact, one of the characters says, why can't we ever invade a cool nation with hot women or something like that instead of these desert nations where it's all hot and inconvenient and the plumbing isn't that good? These are the complaints that we hear. These are the problems facing our Marines. So the other side is never actually focused on, at least not in the first 2 episodes, so I'm not really in a position to judge the program yet. But if it goes all 7 episodes and it just shows this perspective, obviously it's based on somebody who was embedded with the Marines, so yeah, you are only going to get a certain perspective, but you have to at least have a hint that there's more to this than simply these guys who for some reason became Marines and are hungry to kill. And if you can just accept that that is normal, that that is right, that that somehow is a necessary part of our culture, well, then you're just buying into the propaganda. You really are. I mean, I suppose you need to have killing machines if you are a warlike nation that has to go around conquering and getting more and more control over the world. I guess you have to have this group of people, this large group of people hidden someplace that you can simply unleash at any time and they will kill for you. So yeah, in that world, I guess it is necessary. But do we not recognize that that's pretty messed up and that really should not be the way a nation conducts its affairs? Treating its own citizens like that and treating the rest of the world like that. It's just, it's wrong. And that's what I'm having trouble with the program Generation Kill. I've watched a couple of episodes, and at the end of the episodes, this is what gets me. You see this, you see these people, and maybe I'm alone in this feeling here when I watch them. I say, my God, these are horrible people. I mean, I'm rooting for the Iraqis to like lob a few missiles at them at some point because they're just so arrogant. They think their crap doesn't stink, you know? They think they can just go anywhere and do whatever they wish, and the people that are there, just a bunch of camel jockeys that don't matter, and they're a dime a dozen. And in fact, you see in the battle scenes, you see them mowing down all these people, and of course, the good guys never get hurt. You know? You just see one after another, these people with headdresses just being shot, and what are they doing? They're shooting because their land is being invaded by foreigners, by foreign soldiers. It seems like a pretty normal response, yet it's being portrayed as if it was something horrible, that they dare to throw things and shoot at the people from our country. And that would be terrible if they were over here doing that, but they're not. They're in their backyards, they're in their schools, they're in their churches, they're in their land, their place, and we're the bad guys because we should not be there. And yeah, that's a simplistic statement too. So when you turn it around, maybe you see how you simplify these things and it just doesn't work. Anyway, the thing that gets me is that at the end of the program, after watching all this, after seeing these horrible people, after seeing the way that the rest of the world is being treated by us and the horrible image that we now have, and just the fear that is put into the heads of anybody who encounters Americans, especially American soldiers. There's an announcement saying, if you'd like to support the troops, here's how. If you like, after seeing this, after seeing these people, these monsters, being unleashed on this foreign land, here's how you can help. How about how you can help the people who have been murdered, have had their land taken, have had their entire way of life completely destroyed? Courtesy of George W. Bush and his friends. How do you help them? Why isn't there a public service announcement saying that? I know, I'm going to get mail saying that, oh, I hate, I'm a traitor, I hate all the brave soldiers that have been sent over there. You know what? I do not hate anybody who is misled into this, but I do hate people who think that murder is a way of life. And yeah, I always will, regardless of what side they're on. Because there's something screwed up about that mentality. And we have to address that. We have to look at that. We have to stop that. Because, you know, that doesn't go away. That doesn't go away when the war ends. That mentality stays with you for the rest of your life. And it's a sickness. A sickness that's being encouraged and spread around. And I hope that's where this program is going. I hope they actually, you know, The Wire was such a great show. It had so many layers to it, so I hope we see some of the layers here as well, and it doesn't just stay this simplistic PR piece for our military guys. And I hope they bring them home quickly and give them the treatment they're going to need after going through this craziness. And I hope we also pay massive reparations to the entire region for screwing that up beyond belief. And I hope they put George W. Bush on trial in The Hague. He can hang out with some of his Serbian friends, I'm sure. And all the other people in the Bush administration. Yeah, it sounds crazy. It sounds like I'm some kind of lunatic saying, oh yes, put them on trial for war crimes and things like that. You know what? This war is a crime. It should never have happened. It was based on lies. A lot of people have died as a result. Nothing has been accomplished. Somebody should pay for that. And the person who should pay for that is the person who knew from the start that this was not right, yet did it anyway. For what reason? I guess to get more power, to get more influence, to shape the world into the clay sculpture that he wanted. Somewhere, somebody has to stand up and say, no, that's not going to happen anymore, regardless of whether or not you're the most powerful nation in the planet. The rest of the world's not going to take it, so maybe that'll happen, but I really, really doubt it. I don't think it's going to happen with the new Obama administration, if that ever does occur. It certainly won't happen with the new McCain administration. What's going on with Obama? Okay, well, things... Yeah, I'm getting a lot of mail about this. People saying, look, he's flip-flopping, he's switching, he's as bad as McCain. You know what? I can accept the first two. Yeah, he's flip-flops, he's a politician, he changes his views. But to say he's like McCain, no, he's not. He's not as bad as McCain. He's not as bad as Bush. He does represent a change of some sort. Is it enough change? No, it's never enough. It's never enough of a change. But it's something. It's a step. And you're pretty foolish if you're willing to give up that step just to make the point that he's not perfect and he's not as different from McCain as you would like. Back in 2000... I made the mistake that many people made, thinking that there was no difference between Bush and Gore. And turns out there was. Now, does that mean you shouldn't have voted for a third-party candidate? Of course not. That's our system that's messed up. That's our system that says, well, a state is simply going to throw all of its votes one way or another based on this ancient electoral college. Although, do you know that Maine and Nebraska don't have that system? They have the electoral college. I just learned this week, in fact. They can split. They can go both ways. They have a different system. So in two states, it's never happened, by the way. It's never happened. They always seem to have gone one way or another. But the potential exists for them to at least split the vote. It's still not actually one person, one vote, which for some reason is taboo. You can't have that when during a presidential election, because that's something called tyranny of the masses. Tyranny of the masses. Imagine that. I still don't get it. I still don't understand the logic behind, well, if we let each vote count as one vote and make it a popularity contest, as if the presidential election is not a popularity contest, well, then the cities have more power than the farm areas. So what? It's not cities that are voting. It's people in cities that are voting. And people in cities that are voting... Yeah, you know what? They're more of them, so I guess they should have more power. I just don't understand that logic. Maybe that worked back in the 1700s is one of many things that has to be updated and changed. And you notice they never use that logic when they're electing something inside the state. You know, there's no electoral college inside New York when they're electing a governor. That's based on popular vote. So at least let's make it somewhat understandable and simple so that we don't have this craziness with states like Florida and Ohio where it comes down to a county or a corrupt voting machine. It's just nonsense. Makes us even more of a laughingstock in the world. Okay, so anyway, getting to Obama, what Obama has been up to. U.S. presidential hopeful Barack Obama has called for delegates from Michigan and Florida to have their voting rights restored at the Democratic Convention. Yeah, remember this whole controversy? They had their primaries a little bit early, so the Democratic Party penalized them by saying, well, it's not going to count now. And I think what they wound up eventually saying, they never had another primary to make up for this, what they eventually wound up doing was giving them half a vote each. Now, of course, Clinton wanted them to count because she won both of the states, and it would have made a bit of a difference. I don't think it would have been anywhere near enough. But she won those states based on, it was kind of suspicious at best. In one state, Michigan, Obama didn't even campaign. So obviously, he wasn't on the ballot. If he wasn't on the ballot, how could he even stand a chance? Anyway, Clinton had lobbied fiercely for those representatives to be included. Obama, who later won enough delegates to secure the nomination, had until now opposed the move. However, in a letter to the party's Credentials Committee sent on Sunday, he asked members to reinstate full voting rights for the delegates from Michigan and Florida. Now, the convention is going to be held in Denver from August 25th to August 27th. I guess that's enough time for the Olympics to end, and maybe they'll announce a vice presidential candidate then. Maybe. Who knows? And of course, they will be confirming Obama as the party's presidential candidate then. By the way, it won't be Hillary Clinton that's the vice presidential candidate. So just forget that. That's not going to happen. For one thing, she's the keynote speaker at the Democratic convention, so she can't be both. She can't be the keynote speaker and the vice presidential candidate at the same time. Doesn't work that way. Guess who was the keynote speaker in 2004? Yeah, that's right. Oh, Barack Obama. Interesting, isn't it? What goes around comes around or something? So, yeah, you know, it doesn't make a difference anymore. I don't know if this is even considered flip-flopping because, well, they've been punished. Their primary didn't count. And now, okay, the delegates, sure, why can't they vote however they wish to vote? He's already locked up the nomination, so let them do whatever they wish. Don't really see that as, it looks a little sleazy, I guess, that all of a sudden he's changed after he locked it up. But what did you expect him to do? It's obvious that that's something that makes sense if you're running. Okay, what else? This is interesting, too. For one thing, there was this story that that appeared a couple of days ago, and it seems to have disappeared, where John McCain was likening Barack Obama to some kind of religious deity, calling him the One, saying he could do no wrong, and it was kind of like Hillary Clinton's speech when she had all the angel sounds talking about Obama and how he can do no wrong. But this one was a bit more, I guess, offensive. He really seemed to rub people the wrong way. I was looking at comments about this on the CNN website, for one, and every single person who commented was just lashing into McCain, saying he'd sunk to a new low, and how could he mock religion like this? People who actually supported him were angry. And now the whole story seems to have disappeared, like it never happened. It was one of the worst campaign moves I'd ever seen. It was so bad, such bad taste, and so childish and immature. Someone said his campaign seemed to be run by seventh graders. That's the kind of thing you expect to be discussed a little bit more in detail, but the whole thing seems to have disappeared. Weird. In any event, there are other issues that are being discussed. And for one thing, energy issues. Now, I don't know if you follow the news today. I just heard this on the radio, but apparently the price of oil is falling. They're saying it might even go below 100 bucks a barrel. We could be seeing gas prices closer to $3 now instead of $4. And I think that's a bad thing. I think gas prices need to go up. I think we need to basically have our faces slapped a little bit so we don't get dependent on this and have as many big gas-guzzling cars on the road. So hopefully that's not a continuing trend. I'm probably the only person that believes that or hopes for that. But here's a piece from Time magazine that just came out. How out of touch is Barack Obama? He's so out of touch that he suggested that if all Americans inflated their tires properly and took their cars for regular tune-ups, they could save as much oil as new offshore drilling could produce. And gleeful Republicans have made this their daily talking point. Rush Limbaugh is having a field day. The Republican National Committee is sending tire gauges labeled Barack Obama's energy plan to Washington reporters. Yes, but who's really out of touch? The Bush administration estimates that expanded offshore drilling could increase oil production by 200,000 barrels per day by 2030. We use about 20 million barrels per day. So that would mean about 1% of our demand 2 decades from now. Meanwhile, efficiency experts say that keeping tires inflated can improve gas mileage 3%, and regular maintenance can add another 4%. Many drivers already follow their advice, but if everyone did, we could immediately reduce demand several percentage points. In other words, Obama is right. It's interesting. They know so little about how energy works. They just know that they want to keep things going the same way, keep wasting oil and using gas everywhere they go. If anybody suggests anything differently, they're a bleeding heart liberal or a hippie or something like that, and they don't know what they're talking about. Well, we need to start looking at alternatives. We need to start looking at different ways of doing things, different ways of living our lives. And everyone's crying about what are they going to do with their SUVs and their minivans, how are they going to get around with gas so expensive? Well, you don't drive these huge things. You don't have to. How many people actually ride bicycles? You know, to get from home to school, for instance, or from home to work. You see people outside. You see this increasingly in the suburbs. People riding bicycles in the middle of the night. And most of the time, they're restaurant workers, they're dishwashers, they're people that are coming home from some late job. They don't have cars. And you know what? These are the people who are going to succeed. Because they're not throwing money into an endless pit. They're saving money. And they're staying in shape, too. So they're going to win on a bunch of fronts. If more of us did that, there'd be less traffic on the road, we'd be in better shape, we'd be saving more money, and there'd be less pollution, too, of course. But how many of us actually do this? We talk about it, but how many of us really do this? Do we walk instead of taking a train or a bus or our own cars? Perish the thought that we actually should do that. Of course, you know, the infrastructure in this country doesn't make it very easy to do this. Lots of places don't even have sidewalks. But if there's demand, there's no choice. You have to change with the demand. Okay, I guess we'll be taking phone calls in a little bit. 631-632-WUSB. That's our phone number. And I'd like to go over a few more pieces of news. Let's see, what's some of the fun things that are going on this week? This is actually a little bit old, but it's still good. An Oklahoma church canceled a controversial gun giveaway for teenagers at a weekend youth conference. Yeah, Windsor Hills Baptist had planned to give away a semi-automatic assault rifle until one of the event's organizers was unable to attend. Only in America. The church's youth pastor, Bob Ross, said it's a way of trying to encourage young people to attend the event. The church expects hundreds of, expected hundreds of teenagers from as far away as Canada. We have 21 hours of preaching and teaching throughout the week, he said. A video on the church website shows the shooting competition from last year's conference. A gun giveaway was part of the event last year, and this year's organizers included it. This year they included it in their marketing. Wow, you couldn't make this up, could you? I don't want people thinking, my goodness, we're putting a weapon in the hand of somebody that doesn't respect it who are then going to go out and kill. That's not at all what we're trying to do. What in God's name are you trying to do? He said the conference isn't all about guns, but rather about teens finding faith. Why are you handing them semi-automatic assault rifles if they're trying to find faith? How do you find faith with a semi-automatic assault rifle? You know, you find all sorts of things with one of those, but faith, I don't think so. You might force other people to find faith with one of those things, but boy, I don't know. So yeah, they canceled that. That's not happening. Sometimes you have to wonder, what are people thinking? It's literally a different mindset. You have to try and understand it. You can't just go around calling people insane and crazy. People just think in a radically different way. They think something is right when you think it's insane. Now, if we can simply take our tolerance of this kind of lunacy to the rest of the world and apply it to different weird customs that we may not understand and might even find offensive, maybe we'd get along better and would be able to handle it a little bit more. Maybe not, but it's worth a try, don't you think? Okay, I'm going to try the old going into delay thing, which is always a lot of fun. This time I'm just going to do it, and we'll see what happens.
This is Kate from the B-52s, and when I come to Stony Brook, I tune in to WUSB, known as WUSB 90.1 FM.
Here I am in delay, and I'm not even going to check this time because I'm so confident that I actually went into delay. I'm just going to launch into another story, and then take some phone calls at 631-632-9872. And that actually spells WUSB, the 9872 part. I see we have phone calls coming in. Please keep those calls coming in until after I finish the story. Please don't hang up. Please don't give up if it times out, because I do want to take your calls. I want to discuss all sorts of things tonight. We have almost half an hour to do so. But I want to focus first on another story that was in the news. This was a horrible story. This is one of the worst stories I think I've ever seen. Of course, I'm talking about the horrible event in Canada, the attack and beheading of a passenger on a Greyhound bus in the middle of, what is it, Manitoba? My God, that simply was one of the most horrendous stories I think I've ever seen. Basically, this poor kid is he's sleeping with his Walkman on, or iPhone, or whatever it was he was listening to, and all of a sudden this guy sitting next to him just goes berserk and starts stabbing him over and over and over again, and eventually beheads him while the horrified passengers tried to escape. Now, here's an update to that story. He's a Chinese immigrant, the accused, and he also was cannibalizing him as well. I mean, boy, this guy really went off the deepest end I think I've ever seen. He pleaded in court today for someone to please kill me and was ordered to undergo a psychiatric evaluation. You know, that's a no-brainer right there. No matter how sane somebody appears, anybody who does that definitely doesn't have all their screws tightened. Vince Weigan Lee, who immigrated to Canada from China in 2004, is charged with second-degree murder and last Wednesday's slaying of 22-year-old carnival worker Tim McLean, an attack which witnesses aboard the bus said appeared to be unprovoked. He has yet to enter a plea, other than the plea to have to be killed. Lee was scheduled to appear Tuesday to determine whether he should undergo psychiatric testing, but the judge in Portage-la Prairie adjourned the hearing for a short recess to allow a legal aid attorney to confer with him. Since his arrest, Lee has declined to speak to prosecutors and his court-appointed attorney. When asked again by the judge after the recess if he wanted a lawyer, Lee shook his head and then quietly said, "Please kill me," according to the Canadian press. His remark was heard by reporters and confirmed by court clerks, but was not acknowledged by the judge. He's due back in court September 8th. No point really going into the rest of all this. It's pretty horrible. But there is something about this story which I think we can learn from. Now, if this had been a case of somebody who just went berserk with, say, they got a semi-automatic rifle at a church giveaway, for instance, and they just went berserk in a shopping mall or maybe at a church, and just killed a couple of people. In fact, something like that happened, I think, the next day in this country. And you can't even find that anymore in the newspapers. It's not talked about, but it did happen. Someone just walked around and killed a bunch of people. Happens almost every day now. But something like this is so horrible and so savage that you can't help but be struck by it. You can't help but just feel like you have to sit down and wonder if you even belong to the same race as some of these people. What could provoke somebody to do something so horrible? But aren't the people who were killed with the semi-automatic machine gun, aren't they just as dead? Isn't it just as horrible? So when someone is killed in such a horrible way, such a horribly bloody way, you really feel like this is murder. This is really awful and bad. And when it's done from a distance, with bullets, or maybe in a tank, it doesn't seem so bad anymore. I mean, yeah, it's still wrong, still bad, but you can turn the channel, not really think about it all that much. You can be detached from it. So when you have something this horrible that happens, it makes it stand out more. You know, in a way, every death should have this kind of meaning. Every time somebody, imagine all the people that have been killed in Iraq by our soldiers, and of course all of our soldiers that have been killed as well. Imagine if every one of those deaths got the attention that this one did. If every single one was seen as just as savage, just as horrible, just as bloody and tragic and unexplainable. Maybe value would be restored to our lives just a little bit more. Maybe. But, of course, we're always trying to invent new ways to kill people, new ways to make it as painless as possible for the people that are doing the killing so they don't have to be traumatized. Simple push of the button. But, yeah, you know, beheading seems to actually be making a comeback. I don't know about that, but it's one of the earliest forms of killing people because it's most always fatal. Actually, I think it is always fatal, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, a 31-year-old man killed his girlfriend on the Greek island of Santorini on Sunday, then beheaded her and fled in a patrol car. Yeah, he really had a crime wave going on there. During the ensuing chase, the suspect was shot 5 times by police and ran over 2 women doctors who were riding a motorcycle before he was caught. The suspect, Athanasios Arfanitis, a cook at a local restaurant, is undergoing surgery at an island hospital. Neighbors said following a heated argument, Arvanitis beheaded his girlfriend's dog with a butcher knife and then killed and beheaded her. Then he roamed the village of Vorvolos, exhibiting her head. Townspeople said they locked themselves in their homes and called the cops. When a policeman tried to handcuff him, the suspect then knifed the officer and flung the woman's head into a patrol car. The policeman was only slightly injured, but he made off in a second patrol car and then ran over the motorcycle before he was caught. And as the police were firing at the guy to stop him, a stray bullet hit a woman bystander. Oh, boy. They go nuts in Greece as well. I don't know. Something's in the air these days with humanity. Okay, one more story, then we'll take some phone calls. 631-632-9872. So please get those numbers dialed and push those buttons. Let's have some conversations. Children are being denied adventurous play because their parents are nervous about exposing them to risk. This is from the BBC. The UK-wide poll commissioned by Play England found half of 7 to 12-year-olds have been stopped from climbing trees. Yeah. When I was a kid, everybody climbed trees. I didn't climb that high, but I did climb trees. And yeah, some kids fell out of the trees. That's true. They broke things. I think they just broke arms and maybe legs, but it would suck to fall out of a tree, I guess. And how many kids today are forbidden from climbing trees? If you're a parent, do you let your kid climb trees? Is that considered something that's too dangerous? Anyway, half of 7 to 12-year-olds have been stopped from climbing trees. 21% of those surveyed have been banned from playing Conkers. Conkers? Oh, no, they can't play Conkers. My goodness. That's a good percent. 21% can't play Conkers. I mean, that only leaves about 3/4 of the kids out there playing Conkers. And 17% were not allowed to play Chase. Chase. I don't even know how to play Chase. What is that? You just chase somebody down the street? I don't know what Conkers is. I have no clue. I don't know what I'm talking about here. Everybody knows what Conkers is. It must be more dangerous than Chase, though. Anyway, the poll interviewed 1,030 children and young people aged 7 to 16 and 1,031 adults during July of last year. Play England, which says it promotes free play opportunities, insists that parents constantly wrapping children in cotton wool can harm the children's development. The poll found 51% of children aged 7 to 12 were not allowed to climb a tree without adult supervision, while 49% stopped from climbing trees altogether because it was considered too dangerous. According to the research, 70% of adults had their biggest childhood adventures outdoors, among trees, rivers, and woods. What's the difference between trees and woods? Compared with only 29% of children today. That's a big drop. It found children's experiences of adventure are confined to designated areas, such as playgrounds, 56%, their homes, 48%, or theme parks, 44%. Adrian Vos, director of Play England, which is part of the charity National Children's Bureau, said playing was an essential part of growing up. Adventurous play both challenges and excites children and helps instill critical life skills. Constantly wrapping children in cotton wool can leave them Wait a minute, do they actually wrap children in cotton wool in England? I mean, this is England, so it's entirely possible. I thought it was just kind of a metaphor or something, but anyway, constantly wrapping children in cotton wool. And what's cotton wool, exactly? Cotton's cotton, wool is wool. I don't know. Cotton wool can leave them ill-equipped to deal with stressful or challenging situations they might encounter later in life. Children both need and want to push their boundaries in order to explore their limits and develop their abilities. The survey was carried out to mark Play Day, the annual celebration of children's right to play, which is coordinated by Play England. Wow. Okay, so that's interesting. What's going on over in England? Apparently people are being a little bit overcautious. And I know they're being overcautious here in the United States as well, putting rubber, like, barriers and everything so you don't bump into things. Okay, let's take some phone calls. 631-632-9872. See what's on your mind. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Speak up, please. Okay.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You got to speak. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Yes, speak up, please. Speak up. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you just fine. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
How are you? I'm enjoying the program as usual.
Thank you.
You know, you covered so many points, it's hard to touch on all of them, so I'll just kind of espouse my thoughts on some of the
things. Go right ahead.
The things. We kind of invaded a country, a sovereign nation, that complied with 12 years of sanctions and allowed inspectors, UN inspectors, to look under every stone and crevice as well as probably every underwear drawer. And then after 12 years of disarming them and figuring out exactly what they had, we went in and annihilated them, or, you know, shock and awe, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And I do believe the administration thought it was going to be a cakewalk, and it was more of a moneymaker for them rather than a necessary thing to do. I do believe that Saddam Hussein, whether he was a good guy or a bad guy, is not for me to say. But I do believe there would have been better ways to have handled him rather than destroying a whole civilization that is probably, you know, I don't know, 10,000 years old or what have you.
No, of course. And I think you know, you can say he's a bad guy. Definitely, the guy's a bad guy. But there are so many bad guys out there, so many bad guys who are the friends of our administration. It's none of our business who's bad and who's good. I think that what's been going on over the past 18 years or so since the first invasion, we basically wanted to go in again. Even the Clinton administration was preparing to invade. It seemed like something that we were just looking for an excuse to do, and obviously there was a reason for us wanting to do that, to gain more control over oil and more power in that part of the world. And we just looked for an excuse and took it as soon as we possibly could.
Sure, sure. Plus you have such a huge military industrial complex that needs a reason for its existence, as well as the own leaders of our nation. If they are not constantly selling us protection, what else do they actually do? So you had a situation whereby the Soviet Union had collapsed, so you could have cut military spending probably in half, if not, you know, even more so. But on a greater level, I think that, you know, in this day and age, we've seen so many wars throughout history. We've been able to sit back, our educators, and discuss them and review what has occurred, whether it's Vietnam, Korea, the civil wars. You know, wars have never solved anything. They've never, ever, ever have been fruitful for anybody. And in the end of every war, you have a bunch of dead children, a bunch of sad families, of billions of dollars of squandered, whether it's our wealth, infrastructures of both sides, you know, because both sides, nobody ever wins. And you would think in this modern era, we would have been better, we should have set a better example. And then there's the other aspect that kind of bothers me is that, and it's, I don't hear it being discussed, especially in this presidential campaign, is that what about 9/11? I mean, was this all just a lucky coincidence with George Bush? Because you see he was licking his lips to get into Iraq to begin with before he even came to office. And then, you know, just lo and behold, 8 months into it just doesn't make sense to me that this would have happened.
Well, I mean, I think that ties into what I was saying before. Basically, both administrations were simply looking for any excuse. 9/11 happened, perfect opportunity for a couple of things. It was a perfect opportunity for us to really unite with the rest of the world in sympathy and maybe going after people that would do horrible things like this. But the Bush administration saw it as the opportunity to somehow associate Iraq with this in people's minds and make us a lot more warlike so that we wouldn't question nearly as much the next adventure that they had in store for us. And I think that's basically what happened. I don't buy into the whole thing that Bush orchestrated it, because I don't think he can orchestrate his own daily schedule, let alone something as complex as that. I think there are bad people out there that want to do harm to Americans, and I think in many ways that's the fault of our foreign policy in the past. It's something that was inevitable.
Yes, I wouldn't say that they orchestrated it, but I would say that they definitely knew something was about to happen, and they let it happen. I think that they wanted a reason. They didn't realize it was going to be as dramatic as it was, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it did feed into what their desire was. I mean, when you consider the fact that none of the people that were on those planes, then, you know, not that we know who they were, we think we know who they were, but none of them were from Iraq, and yet they were still able to use that line that it was Iraq's doing.
Right,
and,
right, they're Saudi. It's incredible, but...
And also, you know, the anthrax. I remember them, Donald Rumsfeld, saying that the anthrax was from some batch that Saddam Hussein had in Iraq, and now we're finding out that it was, you know, it was American-grade military, and then you have the... Every scientist, there was, so far, as from my counting, there's been three scientists that have committed suicide. One guy, they found his car on a bridge with the door open, and he was nowhere to be found. The other one was an English scientist. I can't think of his name either, and he slit his one wrist or something. They found him in the woods near his home.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
Yeah, and now you have this third scientist who, you know, having a stellar career of 30 years in the military, he turns up dead, and he has this therapist coming forward and say, yeah, he was this, he was that, he was the other thing.
Yeah, supposedly he was obsessed with a sorority or something. It's really a bizarre story. But you also have the guy Hatfield from years ago that was accused and wound up suing the government and winning because he was being accused.
Yes, and they drained
a
lake near his house.
Yeah,
that guy.
So there's a lot of weirdness going on here. No question about that. And I certainly do agree that it's possible that the administration knew a lot more about what could be happening and chose to ignore it. I could definitely see that.
But I see a connection to that in 9/11 in that they were. It was almost like they were setting up a reason to invade.
Well, 9/11 was the best thing that happened to the Bush administration. There's no question about that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, Dick Cheney's, you know, his company, I believe his stock shares were like at $5 and collapsing at the time of his coming into office. He had been cooking his books through Arthur Anderson to keep his company solvent. So he basically was, you know, I mean, had a grand reason for wanting something of this grand scale to occur so that it could justify the expansion as well as the increase influx of Pentagon spending into his operations, you know, because that's what these people do, you know. So, I mean, these are topics that I really think should be discussed. They're not being discussed. I hear about Obama's change, and you had touched on that before, but I really don't see Obama as being a change. To swing the pendulum back and forth between a Republican administration and a Democratic administration constantly is nowhere near change.
Well, definitely it's not enough of a change, but I think it's the most change we can possibly hope for at the moment.
Yeah, but why is that? Why is it that the American people are so, like, dumbed down in a sense? I mean, you have Cynthia McKinney who's running, and I remember she had a forum on the 9/11 commission, and, you know, there was a lot of critique that went on, and then she had all kinds of problems after that, and then...
That's putting it mildly, but...
and you have maybe a Ralph Nader that might have
I think you nailed it there. Ralph Nader, yet again, we need new faces, we need new people, we need people that will motivate us and excite us, and we're not seeing that. That's what we need.
We need a government that actually governs, not a government that's complicit because of I see it in local politics here.
Yeah.
Everybody that's in office in my community is they're from within, you know what I mean? It's like the fox minding the hens.
Right. Well, if you change on a local scale and really shake some things up, you might start a national movement, and who knows, it's possible. Listen, I want to try to get to one more call, but thanks so much.
Okay, thank you for the programming. I really enjoy your discussion.
Thanks for your call. And good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Yeah, how you doing, Emmanuel? Hey, I spoke to you last week about that Long Island train fiasco that you had.
Long Island train fiasco. You know, it's a different fiasco every week. That was the one where the train never showed up, right?
Yeah, and I got the information you wanted.
What, you found out when the train arrived?
Yeah.
How did you do that?
You call up some people, you ask them, and you have to go to call up the Bureau of Public Affairs, and they have a log of every train when it leaves. And the whole nine yards.
I am in awe of you, sir. Okay, that's the 405 train out of Port Jefferson. I guess it was supposed to arrive like about 6:20 or 6:30 in New York City. What time did it actually arrive?
4:39.
What time?
4:39.
Well, it couldn't have arrived at 4:39. I left at 4:05.
Okay. It arrived in Jamaica at 6:05, and the connecting train to Penn Station is canceled.
Oh, great. Wow, I would have really been screwed.
Oh, you would have been.
Oh, boy. I would have been cussing at the storm.
Sure.
Well, thanks for making me feel a lot better about taking the car in that day.
Not a problem.
Great.
I can do to help, Emmanuel.
All right. Thanks so much for your call and for that information.
Peace.
All right. It's proof that off-the-wall listeners can pretty much find out anything if they have a mind to. I guess maybe they can change the world as well. That's always a possibility. Wow. Well, we certainly are facing some interesting times in the month ahead. We've got the Olympics. Oh, boy, what fun that's going to be. And followed by the Democratic Convention, and that in turn followed by the Republican Convention. And it doesn't end there. Then we have the campaign. Yes, we've got the campaign that will stretch on into November, and all sorts of fun things will be revealed. There'll be debates. It'll never end. You know how long this campaign has been going on most of my life, it feels like. Other countries, they just say, you know what, we're going to have an election Wednesday. Be there. And people vote. Why can't you do it that way? Why can't you simply base it on the facts that you already know? If you pay attention to what's been going on in the world, you don't have to waste all this money and time figuring it all out and listening to people ad infinitum for... I'm so sick of it. That's why people get sick of politics, because it just is a never-ending process. Anyway, we didn't talk about this at all. We didn't talk about the vice presidential candidates, who they are going to be. No guesses. I guess what you're going to have to do then, you'll have to write in and send your predictions. But hurry up and do it, because I think by this time next week, we will have at least one of the vice presidential candidates. Who do you think it might be? I think, all right, my predictions, it's just I'm being put on the spot here. I'm going to go with my initial prediction for Obama of John Edwards. Despite the fact that John Edwards has been saying he doesn't want to do it, he's even been changing his mind now. Apparently you guys have been writing to him saying that, you know, Emmanuel said you should run for vice president, and he's been sort of rethinking it now, and that's good. That's good. We need somebody who can, you know, think about alternative ways of doing things. Maybe thinking that they're wrong. Maybe thinking that they need to do a 180, perhaps. Flip-flopping. Okay, so that's who I think. That's who I actually hope Obama will be running with. For McCain, actually, I hope this as well. I hope he picks Mitt Romney. I really do, because if he does that, then I think he's pretty much clinched losing, if that's a phrase. Whether he actually will pick Mitt Romney, I don't know. It's kind of... doesn't seem all that likely, but then again, Mitt Romney has been kissing some pretty serious ass, so it's entirely possible. All right, that's going to pretty much do it for the show here. I'm going to keep watching Generation Kill. Maybe that show will get better. Maybe I'll see some more perspectives on that. I'd like to know if other people have opinions on that as well, if they have other TV shows they'd like to discuss that they feel are worth time to actually study. There are some good things out there. You just have to look for them. Most of them are on pay TV, though, or foreign TV. Again, our email address, otw@2600.com. We'll see you in a week. Have a good night.